Sooners Extra Podcast. As always, the Sooners Extra Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's, the home of handmade-to-order chicken, salads, and more than a dozen mild-to-wild sauces. Stop by your neighborhood Zaxby's today, although you have to take it to go. It's a different time in this world. I'm Ryan Aber here, joined by phone with Abby Bitterman. And Abby, what a strange time we're in right now.
It really is. I mean, we're even social distancing on the podcast, you know, doing it from our respective homes. Just the world is so much different now than it was just 8 or 9 days ago.
9 days ago.
That feels like like a lifetime.
Yeah, it feels like there's pre-Rudy Gobert test and post-Rudy Gobert test is sort of the eras that we're living in. Abby, we got to start off talking about the Big 12 basketball tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you were up there in Kansas City. What was that like to be in the center of all of that? You go to a game on, I assume you went to the OSU game.
Yeah.
There on Wednesday night. And then you hear about Rudy Gobert's test, and all of a sudden you wake up on Thursday morning, and the tournament is not only to be played without fans, which they had already announced, but it's going to be canceled completely, and then everything just started snowballing from there.
Yeah, I mean, on Wednesday, we were still actually, so every year, as I'm sure you know, Barry Trammell has a friend in Kansas City who takes him to see some of the local, big things to see. So we had been seeing the Truman Library and things like that. And we were just about headed back to the hotel when we found out that the NCAA tournament was going to be played without fans. And so at that point, you kind of figure it's a matter of time before they say the same thing about the Big 12 tournament. And about 15 minutes before the Oklahoma State game started, they did. And so I was supposed to be writing a story about Austin Reeves in advance of OU's game on Thursday night. But instead, I shifted, obviously, to writing about how there wouldn't be fans. And I walked around and I talked to some OU and OSU fans. And a lot of them learned the news from me because, I mean, by the time I was talking to them, it was like maybe a little over half an hour old. And they had been at the game watching the Oklahoma State-Iowa State game. And so a lot of them learned from me that there wouldn't be fans the next day. And then, you know, I was sitting there listening to the Oklahoma State post-game press conference when we all found out that the news that looked fake on Twitter at first and then was real, that Rudy Gobert had tested positive, and the NBA season was suspended. It was just shocking. And then you kind of wondered, well, what does that mean for literally every other sport? And the next day we got to the Sprint Center at about 10:30. When I walked by the court at 10:39, the Texas and Texas Tech players were warming up. And then somebody tweeted that they'd been pulled off the court, and I was in the media workroom, and I walked over to the court to see what was going on, and everything was being packed up. And at that point, I think it was the ACC and another tournament had already been canceled, and you just knew we were all about to go home too. And a couple minutes later, Bob Bowlesby said exactly that. So it was honestly just surreal to watch it all happen in front of me. I mean, I was sitting in the front row for both of the press conferences that Bob Bowlesby gave, and it was kind of unbelievable. I mean, you heard the words, but it took a real minute, at least for me, for it to sink in and for me to fully grasp what that meant. And then I was packing up in my room when they canceled all the rest of the NCAA tournaments for this school year. So, I mean, it was just people kept talking about how the news changed every hour, and it moved so fast. You almost couldn't stop to comprehend what had happened, you know, one thing happened, and then 30 minutes later, another thing happened, and 30 minutes later, it something even bigger happened. I mean, it was almost unbelievable the pace that things were moving at, and things somehow still seem to be moving quickly. I mean, when I said that 9 days ago, like it feels like it was like a month ago that all that happened, but it was last week.
Yeah, it's definitely been a crazy week, especially for those of us who, well, it's been a crazy week for everybody. I'm not going to say especially for those of us who work in sports, but it's certainly been weird for us just because we're so much about, well, what's the next event going on? And it consumes our days that when there's not a next event going on, you know, really except for some, you know, minor, well, not minor, but NFL free agency news is about the only thing going on in sports unrelated to this. The world just sort of stops for a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, we cover it, obviously, so it stops for us in terms of, like, having things to cover. But, I mean, for a lot of players, it also stopped prematurely. And, I mean, you gotta... I'm sure we'll talk a lot more in depth about those, but like my immediate thoughts, especially when the spring championships got canceled, I just thought about all the players that are seniors. And you know, Christian Doolittle, I mean, he was playing in the quarterfinals of the Big 12 tournament for the first time in his 4-year season, and he didn't even get to, that was the furthest he'd ever made it, and he didn't even get the chance to play in it. So just, and I mean, aside from sports, like you mentioned, I mean, kind of the ways that this has affected everyone's lives is a lot further reaching than I think anyone could have ever imagined, like just over a week ago when all of this really started to ramp up.
Yeah, no doubt. I think it was, and we will talk about the ramifications of this thing on spring athletes and others here in the next segment. But you know, you think about, I guess a month and a half ago, when a group representing college athletes said that the NCAA tournament should be played without fans. And I think at that point, that long ago, a lot of us thought, oh, that'll never happen, that's ridiculous. You know, I think a lot of us thought that yes, this thing would get to the United States in a major way, but that it would take longer than it has. But everything sort of snowballed rather quickly once, obviously, everything started happening in Washington with the cases up there and the outbreak, especially concentrated in the nursing home. And then we start getting these positive tests in the sports world. Obviously a lot of them in the NBA, I think there's just one NHLer to this point that's tested positive. Then yesterday, we're speaking on Friday, we heard about the New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton testing positive. I know we'll hear quite a bit more about those things. And I think, you know, people talk about, you know, why are we talking about those people who test positive in the sports world? You know, I think it's important for people to get connections to this thing. And a lot of us don't know anybody mm-hmm. who has the coronavirus or COVID-19 or has tested positive. But a lot of us know who Kevin Durant is and Sean Payton and Marcus Smart, obviously, and so many of the other NBA folks, Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert especially, that have tested positive to this thing. And it's just one of those things that while you do wonder about the testing and that these healthy people have been able to acquire the test when so many people haven't been able to get tested, but I do think it's positive for people to hear that these people have tested positive, that it's out there, and that this thing is real.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I think the questions about how they were all able to get tests are completely valid. But also, you're exactly right. Like, there are a lot of people who have continue to go out and kind of, you know, act like everything's normal and like we're still living in a normal time when we very much are not. And so I think that, you know, seeing how, you know, if it can happen to an NBA player, then it in or an athlete in any other sport, then it can easily happen to you. I think that seeing that hopefully makes it more real for people. And I think that that's why, you know, in addition to knowing that these athletes are getting it, you know, seeing the numbers increase every day, I think for me also makes it more real. And hopefully, I mean, I don't want, you know, more people to have it, but hopefully we can continue to truly see the extent of this as the tests become more available and we just see those numbers grow even more. Because I think that's the thing that makes it the most real, is when you truly see how many people are being affected by this, not just the economic or the far-reaching implications of closing things down, but of actually, you know, contracting the coronavirus.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We're going to take a break there. We're going to be back on the other side of the break to talk more about the effects of the coronavirus and COVID-19 on the sports world, especially OU sports. Thank you so much for joining us once again. This is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zach. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Abby, we talked in the first segment about your experience at the Big 12 basketball tournament, but you touched on this right there at the end about the effects of this shutdown on the athletes, and certainly Christian Doolittle is one of the major ones. I think also people obviously talk about Maggie Nichols a lot, chasing yet another all-around national championship, and OU as a team was looking really, really strong here entering the home stretch for them. And touch on the spring athletes in a little bit, but the winter athletes are the ones that we're really wondering about right now, because Christian Doolittle was going to get a chance to, like you said, play in an area of the Big 12 tournament that he hadn't made it to, was going to make the NCAA tournament. Maggie Nichols and Jay DeGuevea had really high expectations as well. And as of now, it looks like that their careers on the college level are over.
Yeah, and we on the beat talked to Christian the other day, and I talked to his dad too, and you know, Christian said he's taking it day by day, but when I talked to his dad, I mean, it looked like, you know, if the NCAA does decide to give them a year of eligibility back, then they'll look at that, you know, when it happens. But that's still very much up in the air, and I mean, I don't really know how likely it is. I think it's more likely that their college careers are just over. But Dwayne Doolittle did tell me that they're, you know, just looking at what is a certain option right now, and that's for Christian to go play professionally somewhere. So while, you know, things didn't end certainly the way that they wanted or hoped, they're just looking for the next opportunity for Christian to see what that is. And if the NCAA does come back and decide that they can get another year of eligibility, then I guess they'll take that as it comes. But I mean, for right now, I would agree. I don't think it's a bad option to look at what is a certain possibility for next year and focus on that.
Yeah, and that's still going to be difficult, just because, you know, even if they give these athletes the option of another year, some of them aren't going to take it because they're moving on to the NBA or other professional sports as well. And then KJ Kindler told me in gymnastics, it's really hard for them to take it, just because it's really hard for them to take yet another year of wear and tear on their bodies. Now, I think Maggie Nichols could be in a position where she could take it and they could work with her schedule to try to optimize things at the end of the season for her. It's easy for her because she was already planning on staying in Norman as a student assistant coach, volunteer assistant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure yet what Jade DeGlavea's plans are, but it's not as simple on multiple levels, not just the initial level of as giving them an extra year, because it affects the underclassmen who would be behind them, whoever would start, say, in Christian Doolittle's place next year, whoever would back him up that might be forced out of the rotation. So it's a really tough balancing act to play right now.
Yeah, and then, I mean, to just go on to spring sports, where it looks like, from what the NCAA has said so far, they're still figuring out the details, but the last we heard, it looks like they do want to give that year of eligibility back for spring sport athletes. But then when we talked to Patty Gasso, just the seniors.
Well, although I will say this, just the seniors, although it looks like as long as other people would be able to redshirt based on the existing rules, then they would be able to, they would be allowed to.
Yeah. But when we talked to Patty Gasso, I mean, she had dozens of questions about how this would look. I mean, not necessarily for her program, because she only has three seniors and two of them are pitchers, but she said, if this was last year when I had six seniors and then I had eight people coming in, how do you manage that? How do you do we get more practice time? Do we get are there changes on roster limits? How do you afford that, travel wise, scholarship wise? Just dozens of questions, which I think are really important and need to be answered. And I mean, again, not necessarily for OU softball, because they kind of have a little bit of an easier position. They're in a bit of an easier position than other programs, but there are probably a lot of programs out there that are senior heavy that it'll be a lot more difficult for them, you know, figuring out what that looks like, especially because, I mean, Patty Gasso said that if, you know, they are allowed to come back, all three of them, she expects all three of them to come back. And I'm sure that's true of a lot of college softball players, because the road of professional softball isn't as fruitful as one would hope it would be.
Yeah, you know, baseball is even more complicated. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly what the scholarship rules are in college softball, since I haven't covered that side of things, but I know in baseball the limits, which I believe are 11.7 scholarships for 27 players, those scholarships can be divided over. And the draft rules, which where juniors can be drafted, they don't have to declare or anything, they just can be drafted, and then they make their decision after the draft whether to sign or come back. That complicates things a lot. And I know, talking to Skip Johnson, what he wanted to see is some kind of lift on the scholarship limits, but also to allow for more games in the fall. And right now, I think there can only be a certain amount of scrimmage time. I know OU went to Arkansas and played an 17, 18 inning scrimmage. Those kind of things are all that they can do. But he wanted to have a more extended fall season, almost, where they could play some games. And I know softball does something similar to that, but it's going to be really interesting, because you've got guys like Brandon Zaragoza. What does he do? He's a senior, will have the opportunity to come back, but at the same time, he might be a guy whose draft slot, you know, sends him forward, but also whoever would be the starting shortstop next year, the effect sort of snowballs on down. But then you've got a guy like Cade Cavalli, who is almost sure to be a high enough draft pick to want to go as a junior, who is going to have not a really hard decision, but it's certainly going to take away some from what his career could have been and also what OU baseball could have been, because they were off to a really, really good start. And it looked like their best team in about a decade. They were 14-4, had the pitching and the offense to make a run at this thing. And they were almost to Big 12 play. They were supposed to play this week. They were supposed to play Arkansas. And today, as we're talking, they were supposed to get ready to open up Big 12 play against Texas at home. And just
as was OU softball.
Yeah,
they were. So, I guess they were both going to play Texas at home this weekend. And Texas softball, I mean, is like OU, one of the top teams in the country this year. So that, or was, I guess, until it ended. But so that would have been, I mean, a heck of a series. And I'm sure the same is true for baseball. And baseball, like you said, I mean, they had won some really big games and already done some really great things in just about a little over a month that the season had been in existence.
Yeah, I think for baseball, one of the points that Skip Johnson made was just he really thought that fans were really getting ready to come out and support that team. And with OU baseball, it's always sort of slow to get going. But once they sort of prove themselves as a team that can compete near the top of the Big 12, fans will come out and watch. And Skip Johnson felt like they were just about to that point, that, you know, maybe if they were able to beat Arkansas at home this week, at Tuesday at Bricktown Ballpark, and then have some success against Texas, that would get the ball rolling and more fans would come out to L. Dell Mitchell, and also maybe some people would donate money to their ballpark renovation, which they're trying to get done sort of alongside the softball, the new ballpark that they're trying to get built. So, you know, a really, really tough timing for this thing is, there were some great series on the horizon for this weekend, because you mentioned Texas softball, what they had been this year. I think, were they number one when things ended, or were they right there?
Truly, I don't even remember anymore, but I know they had just beaten number one UCLA. So honestly, so much has happened that I can't even remember, but there's a good chance.
Yeah, I know that they were sort of you thought that they were about to get elevated to number one. Let's see. It looks like they weren't at the time, but they were probably going to be by the time that this series kicked off.
Yeah.
Just doing some quick looking. Texas baseball had gotten off to a really good start as well. They were 14-3. So we were going to have a 14-3 Texas team and a 14-4 Oklahoma team, obviously pending some of the results during the week, play each other to start Big 12 play. So OU Texas is always fun to watch, but certainly would have been a lot of fun this weekend to see these series go like they did. All right, we're going to take a break there and be back on the final segment of the Sooners Extra podcast presented by Zaxby's with some actual OU football talk, because there actually has been a little bit of news going on. We'll see you after the break. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra podcast presented by Zaxby's. Once again, I'm your host, Ryan Aber, here with Abby Bitterman. And Abby, had a little bit of actual on-the-field football news go on late last week when Trey Sermon announced his decision to transfer. How surprising was that for you?
It was surprising on a lot of different levels. The first was there was so much already going on. I was like, what? Like, why this exact moment? But I was also just kind of surprised because, you know, I mean, obviously he had sat out a lot of the season with his injury. And so I guess I was just kind of surprised that he made that decision, you know, while still in the process of recovery and with the spring just getting started. What about you, Ryan?
You know, I wasn't necessarily surprised that he decided to transfer, and I'll get into that in a second. What I was surprised about was the timing of it. After him being at Pro Day on Wednesday, and then that news, I think it was Thursday, that it started coming out that he was going to transfer, that part of it was a little intriguing or different for me, but not necessarily the fact that he was going to transfer, because yes, he battled a lot of injuries last year, but even when he was healthy, he wasn't getting a lot of carries. Kennedy Brooks and him were splitting those duties. Ramondre Stevenson obviously found his role there. And I think there was some level of frustration there over that even when he was healthy, he wasn't getting, what he felt like were the share of carries that he merited. So that was a little bit interesting. Now,
that's true. I kind of
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I kind of always chalked that up to there was a time when none of the running backs were getting a lot of carries because Jalen Hurts was doing it all. But I guess that, you know, that's a good point, that I feel like that's something that would be frustrating anyway. So, yeah, that actually does make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and obviously OU's offense runs so much on those RPOs where a lot of times, at least last year, it wound up being Jalen Hurts getting a lot of those carries in those situations. And I'm certainly not saying that he made the wrong reads on those. I mean, just the numbers, you know, sort of speak for themselves in that regard. But at the same time, I think it was a little bit frustrating. Now, what this does, though, is put OU in a tough position early in the season, assuming that Ramondre Stevenson does have to sit out the first five games, because you've got Kennedy Brooks there. They feel really good about him, obviously, and what he can do. But behind that, things get a little bit dicey. They've got T.J. Pledger, who we didn't see much of last year. I know that Lincoln Riley always talks highly of him, but we haven't seen that production on the field. Marcus Major, sort of the same thing. Seen production from him even less after he got hurt early last year and set out for the rest of the year as a true freshman, wound up redshirting. And then they've got, a freshman coming in. Obviously, they feel really good about Seth McGowan, but, how quickly is he able to step into that role? So those first five games next year, assuming Ramondre Stevenson's suspension is upheld and he winds up having to miss what would be through the Texas game, that could be big for the Sooners.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Ryan, what about the other football-related news that we got? Truly, I don't even know what day it was anymore. All my days run together. but was that Wednesday that we found out that the spring game isn't likely to be, or won't be happening on April 18th anymore?
Yeah, it was, and that wasn't surprising to me at all. I think
none of us expected
that they would be able to have a spring game on April 18th. The question now becomes, can they have a spring game at all? I think my feelings, and I think the feelings of a lot of people, both in and out of the athletic department, are that they're very unlikely to be able to have a spring game. And it's not just about when this thing ends and when they can, potentially start any kind of spring practice again. Although, I think there's a chance that we'll hear from the Big 12 on that at some point. But it's also about the fact that they've only gone through one day of workouts in pads, or not even in pads, without pads. So getting to the point where you can have any kind of spring game is still probably at least a couple weeks away after they would come back, even if they had the spring game in the middle of their spring practice schedule. So all the logistics of putting that together, the optics of having a gathering with that many people, even in the immediate aftermath of this thing, I think it becomes less and less likely that we have a true spring game this year. So that's yet another thing that's been canceled due to the coronavirus.
Yeah, and I think that it's just from all the logistical aspects that you mentioned, and that was similar to what Joe Castiglione said when he was talking to Barry on the radio. I think that from all those aspects, not having it like having the rest of the sports is probably a good call. And how do you have a spring game when none of the other sports can even play, and the spring game is really just a practice, you know?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. Now, here's a question that I was asked on the radio today, Abby, and wanted to see what you thought. How does everything that's happened here in the spring affect the quarterback race for the Sooners?
Well, that is a great question. I think that, you know, there's a quarterback battle every fall. I think that, I guess, us outside the locker room, I think we have formed opinions on how it will end. But, I mean, I think that, you know, Spencer Rattler is still, I guess he'll be a redshirt freshman next season. And I would think maybe still has a little bit to prove. And I think that this probably just extends the quarterback battle into fall camp, which, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't have been surprised if it extended there anyway. I mean, Lincoln Riley said that if there was a clear winner by the end of the spring, that he'd feel comfortable announcing that. But I think that, you know, most of the quarterback battles have come down until very close to the actual first game of the season. And so I think that that just might mean that once again, with this one, we don't hear who it is until closer to the date of an actual game.
Yeah, I agree with you on that point, that I think that this, the announcement gets pushed back, although I don't think Lincoln Riley was ever going to announce it, you know, very much earlier than that for a lot of reasons. You know, I don't think there's any indication outside of just the raw words that we've heard come out of Lincoln Riley's mouth that Tanner Mordecai seriously pushed Jalen Hurts for this job last year, or that Austin Kendall seriously pushed Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
I mean, the results on the field speak to that, it wasn't as close as we were told.
Now, and yet those announcements, like I just said, weren't made until very close
right.
to.
Now, I want to be clear there. I understand why Lincoln Riley does what he does, because you have to keep that second quarterback invested, both mentally and emotionally, but also physically. Keep him there and not transfer, because especially with the quarterback depth, what it is now and what it was, you know, back when Austin Kendall had to be pushed into service as a backup as a freshman, you have to keep those quarterback battles alive to keep those quarterbacks on campus, because, you know, you can play two running backs, you can play four receivers, you can play all these things. You can't play two quarterbacks in any realistic kind of way. So there's only one position there to be battled
for. We saw that at
for.
Alabama.
Right. So, but my theory is, and I said this earlier talking with Pat Jones and Bill Haston from the Tulsa World and Eric G up on the Sports Animal in Tulsa, I think this stoppage, when you're talking about the quarterback battle in itself, benefits Spencer Rattler more, because I think Tanner Mordecai had more to prove.
Yeah.
And maybe if he would have, you know, come out this spring and he looks really good and Spencer Rattler looks a little bit shaky, then, you know, maybe that quarterback battle does become real going into the fall. Now there's no doubt it's real, but I think the capital that Spencer Rattler's built up, and we've seen it on the field, even in those brief glimpses, we saw, you know, some of the special things that Spencer Rattler can bring. So I think Tanner Mordecai has more ground to close. Now, for the development of quarterbacks as a whole, clearly this stoppage is not beneficial. They needed Spencer Rattler to get those reps. They needed, you know, Tanner Mordecai to get those reps during the spring to help bring them at a point in the fall where they're close to being able to go out there and in game action. So in a weird way, I wonder, not that I still anticipate hearing who the starter quarterback is going to be before a couple weeks before the season, but I wonder if it makes it more likely that Lincoln Riley is forced to choose quicker because he's got to have that guy who gets 75% of the reps instead of 50%.
Yeah, that's a great point. Is there anyone else who you think is or who else do you think is hurt by by the lack of a spring practice season?
Oh, all the incoming freshmen obviously mm-hmm. are the ones who get hurt the most. Those guys who spring is such a big stepping stone for them to be ready. And I think school as much as anything else, and they don't really get to experience that beyond, you know, whatever it was, 2 months of the spring semester. So, I think that they're losers in this thing. And I think another one is Trey Norwood, who was back being cleared. It was able to go during the spring. And I think that this would have been good for him to, one, prove where he was in returning from that ACL injury he suffered before last year. But two, figure out where OU coaches wanted to use him, because he could play in pretty much every spot back there. And they're going to need a guy like him to contribute. But without those reps and without that time seeing him, it gets really compressed, assuming there's no more spring football.
Yeah.
Oh, another point, another sort of loser I'd add to this thing is recruiting. Because the recruiting calendar gets thrown into turmoil here. They've got this long dead period. You know, we'll see what happens there. I would anticipate the NCAA at some point making a change to the recruiting calendar once we figure out in full what the ramifications of this thing are. But for now, it's sort of in a you know, sit tight and wait mode, which is really difficult for these coaches and also these juniors and seniors who are entering a very critical recruiting time.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, even though football doesn't get played till the fall, I mean, the ramifications for what's going on right now extend into literally everything you can possibly think of.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So, but we've got plenty of time to think about these things, to talk about these things, because as of now, the next sporting event that we sort of have circled on our calendar that we, I'm not going to say no is going to happen, because who knows what's going to happen over the next few months, but is in mid-July when Big 12 football media days take place, and hopefully we'll be back to some sense of normality by then. But we're going to try to be back. I don't know if we'll be back, hopefully once a week, to bring you some Sooners talk on the Sooners Extra podcast. But hopefully we'll be able to line up some guests and do some different things here during this break.
We'll find some stuff to talk about.
We can certainly just talk about the movie bracket.
Yes, vote in the movie bracket.
Yeah, go vote in that, please.
Don't tell me about how you're mad about the seedings. I tried my best.
Yeah, all complaints for the seedings go to abitterman@oklahoman.com. That correct, Abby?
Yes, that is correct.
Stunned that I said that.
Yes, send all of your complaints about me leaving off your favorite movie, or me seeding the teams wrong, even though I'm looking at the results so far and there aren't as many upsets as you'd think. But also, we could only pick 64 movies, and there are a lot of good sports movies. So
this is true. So you should have plenty of time to watch them here during this time of change in this country. But hopefully you'll get to watch a few of those, especially your favorites. And go vote in the bracket at oklahoman.com. But we're going to end it there. We'll be back, like I said, hopefully next week for more Sooners Extra Talk. The Sooners Extra podcast, once again, presented by Zaxby's. You can check out our work every day at oklahoman.com and every morning in the Oklahoman for the best OU coverage anywhere.